What makes this topic controversial is that it's going to deal with a very sensitive issue, one that to the modern ear is going to sound kind of rough, old-fashioned, archaic, and illegal. So the topic is what's referred to as Amma Ivriya. How many do I have enough? As Amma Ivriya, which in English, we have enough, is translated as a female slave. Mistress,
I guess maybe.
So there's only 1, 2, 3, 4, only 5 psukim, only 5 verses. But these 5 verses are poignant. They really highlight I guess what the Torah is trying to tell us. So it's okay. I don't need a copy. It's fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it's fine. Okay. Let's begin by reading it, and you tell me what you think of the language. Okay. So,
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yeah, because people don't talk about it. It's not. It actually the psukim. There you go. You got another copy. Follow, you see here it's number 8. So I actually think it's verse 7. I think my numbering is off. And the previous shir that we gave, the psukim ended at 6. So it basically follows right after
okay.
We talk about the Hebrew slave. Here we go. The Torah begins by saying that when a man sells his daughter as a slave, she shall not be freed as male slaves are. So the first thing you read, you're like, what? A female slave? What is going on here? Right? Like, what does that mean? Right, what is that? How could that be? So let me give a bit of context. We're talking about a situation where a father sells his 11-year-old daughter. 11-year-old daughter.
11?
You'll see how the age is important.
Okay.
As a slave.
But it's allowed. Like, it doesn't sound like it's like...
Mm-hmm.
But isn't she not, like, really a slave?
I mean,
like, isn't it more for her?
Like, isn't she, like, raised as, like, to become his wife?
Okay. Let's continue reading. What does it mean when it says she's not freed like a male slave? So that means the moment she becomes mature, she actually gets to leave. Mm-hmm. But when she hits puberty, she goes. Okay. If she proves to be displeasing to her master, who designated her for himself, what does that mean? He must let her be redeemed. What does it mean if she proves to be displeasing to her master?
He doesn't find her attractive?
Doesn't find her attractive. Well, wait a second. Attractive? This is an economic relationship, no?
Clearly not.
Oh, so all of a sudden we're seeing very odd language here, right? Okay, good. Let's come back to that. He must let her be redeemed. He shall not have the right to sell her to outsiders. I mean, he can't flip her on the open market since he broke faith with her. What do you mean he broke faith with her? You don't use that terminology of faith when it comes to, again, economic relationship, right? Like, what's going on here? So, then, if he designated her for his son, he shall deal with her as the practice with free maidens. So, something is very odd. Okay, so it's for him, it's for his son. But if the son takes her, if he designated her for his son, he shall deal with her as in the practice. Sorry, it's rather it. If he marries another, meaning if the son marries somebody else, he must not withhold from this one her food, clothing, or conjugal rights. By the way, as just to let you know.
Did he divorce her now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he could. So if he decides to have a second wife, because remember, according to the Torah, he can have more than one wife, he's not allowed to withhold from her what his obligations are. These three things. If he fails her in these three ways, she gets to go without payment. Now, here's something which is absolutely fascinating. And that's if the source of the ketubah, of what a man, a husband, is obligated to provide his wife, all that actually comes from here. I mean, this is the source of what a man has to provide his wife. Why would the Torah choose this, of all places, to be the source of what a husband has to provide his wife?
To show that she should be treated like a regular wife?
Oh, it clearly wants to... What's the great danger? The danger is she'll be treated like a second, like Cinderella. Mm-hmm. So, since there's a danger of her being a Cinderella, the Torah highlights and says, no, she is not a Cinderella. In fact, the obligation of how you have to treat a wife actually comes from here. So that's shocking or fascinating the way it's written out. Now, again, let's use the same opening discussion that we had previously to provide context to this case. What do I mean?
The father's selling her because he can't afford to pay for her to live.
So let's say, you know, ladies, what's the best way to become rich?
Marry rich.
Very good.
Whoa.
He started the question with ladies. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
You knew where that was going.
Yeah.
Says the girl who's in law school.
The men also are very rich. You never know.
If you're poor and you can't afford to provide for your daughter, rich people are friends with rich people. Poor people are friends with poor people. That's just the way it goes. I have very few friends. I have a couple of friends who are very few friends who are wealthy. It's not my circles. It's not grad. I'm in Thornhill. You know, just the way it is. Wealthy people know wealthy people. It's just the way it goes. But if someone is really poor, and especially in the olden days, what hope do they have? If they could recreate through social reengineering a way of allowing this young lady to have hope, to have a future. Remember, single women in the ancient world were in big trouble. If we can have her marry the Reichman's son, the wealthy landlord, the wealthy person's family, she'll have a chance. And the father will be able to provide his daughter. He can't provide for her. But if I can have her marry someone wealthy, she's going to be able to survive. But what's the great danger? She was sure like Cinderella. So I think we have to look, again, similar as to before, we have to look at this whole parshia as the economic reality, the social reality of the ancient world. What is the social economic reality of the ancient world? How do you deal with the situation where the father is so poor? The daughter, who's going to marry her? What hope does she have? What's she going to be in her life in the ancient civilization? Answer? Have her marry, arranged her, hopefully, have her marry somebody else. So I think that's what's happening. That's what's happening here. Meaning, let's try and have her marry somebody. How are we going to do it? He has to marry. In fact, the Talmud says something fascinating. Generally speaking, when a man gets married, you have to give a ring, Kesef Kedushin, to a woman. The Gemara says, you don't need a Kesef Kedushin in this case. Do you know why? She's already half married to him. This is just not your... This is not really an economic relationship. And we see it in the Pesukim. And Leah, I think, was hinting to it. Right? Listen to this line. Since he broke faith with her. Read it out. What about faith is there? right? Right? Who designated her for himself. Who designated her? The answer is, really, this is under the guise of marriage. When she's 11 years old, it's maybe more of a working relationship. And when she becomes a mature female, which is the age of 12, 12 and a half, then she becomes his wife or the child's wife. The child's wife, the son's wife.
But how does it say to broke faithful parent?
Lo yus bevidova, being a boged is like a traitor.
Didn't she marry someone else?
Yeah, meaning yes. So if
did she marry a Cohen?
Yeah.
Even if she was considered kind
of wait,
married?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
The issue of a Cohen is an issue of yeah, because she's not really married. She's still not really married. Though. Yeah, good question. I'm pretty sure she could. Pretty sure she could. Yeah. Okay, so now all this makes sense, because then it says im livno yadena, if she's really been designated for the son, he must. By the way, the greatest challenge is that he's gonna treat her like a second class wife. Yeah. For sure it is. But she's Cinderella. She's poor. He's really his first wife. His second wife. She's, you know, the baron's daughter. You can treat her well. But here are all the spitzy clothing and everything. Right? So that's why the Torah specifically has to highlight, give me shpat habinot yasala. Don't forget, she needs to be treated just like, and in fact, like I said before, that's actually the source of how the husband has to treat his wife.
He doesn't specify at what level, though. Like, is there some minimum of, let's say, clothing?
Mm-hmm.
Because technically you could be like, here's a white shapeless dress, you're done. I'm just curious. Or like food, like I'm assuming it's an amount to keep someone alive, but you don't want an amount that just barely keeps someone alive.
Huh. I think. I mean, the ketubah just spells out, you know, basic necessities.
I mean, I understand that because basic necessities are considered food, right? Necessities could be different for the baron's daughter versus, mm-hmm. like, the pauper's daughter. But there still has to be some basic minimum, I would think.
Yeah.
Even if you come from nothing and you're going through this process so that you don't die.
The minimum is what's in the ketubah. Yeah. Okay. That amount of money and that. Which should be enough to live on. I mean, that's the idea behind it. That's enough to live on and function and whatever. Yeah.
I'm not clear exactly on what the ketubah even says.
Well,
is it like a yearly amount or like?
Well, so wait.
Like how many?
What makes the ketubah complicated is that for Ashkenazim, the money is still Mishneic money. Sephardim, the ketubah is actually in Canadian dollars. They'll say 18,000, 36,000. So, a Ashkenazi ketubah.
Not much to live on except per year.
It's basically enough for her to live for a year. That's the idea behind it. That's the idea behind it.
It's more than 18,000.
Yeah. It ends up being about $36,000. Yeah. Also depends on the price of silver. Like, it's a little more. It's pegged to the US dollar, because it's mentioned in silver. Mm-hmm. So.
How much do Ashkenazim get?
So that's what I'm saying. It's pegged in
Right, but like, how does that translate into
Yeah, it's somewhere, but like it's about 25 to 30.
Dollars?
35,000, no, 1,000.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, the RCA and the prenup agreement, you know, also has a set amount. Hmm. So, same idea. It's a good question. So it's actually interesting when I officiate at a wedding, I make sure that every chatan I learn with, I mm-hmm. translate the ketubah in English and I tell him the amount of money because he can
just have
a promise, so he knows what he can do.
Yeah.
And the witnesses who sign it are actually acting on behalf of the bride. I give them a copy in English because otherwise they're agreeing to something which there's no way they know what that means. You know. So you're right.
Yeah, that's true. If someone signs something, but they don't know what it means, at least in Canadian law,
means nothing.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so that's why they have to be told what it means. Again, maybe they know, like, in general, it's like some agreement of some sort, right. But definitely not specific. It's not the amount of money. So, again, what I think I want to highlight here is that this is really ultimately dealing with a case of how do you help out in a world that doesn't have welfare, in a world that doesn't have unemployment insurance, in a world that is limited in its economic support system. And as we said before, when you're really poor, tzedakah is not helpful.
Right.
You know, I said this as a joke before, but it's true. You know, leket, shicha, and peah are very nice if you have an oven. But leket, you know, to get a couple of scraps of grains is not helpful, are not helpful enough in many cases. So what this is almost, I think, both in terms of an Eved Ivri and a Maivriya, has to be looked upon as a super stucca case, and especially in the case of a Maivriya, it involves another dimension, which is like social reengineering.
I might be like pessimistic, but it could be also, like, it sounds like it could be for the family, because, like, they're poor, so let's just sacrifice our daughter, so that she'll be taken care of, yes, but we might also have proxy be taken care of, right? Because she's mistress of the house.
Well, remember, how is the father going to benefit?
He's the father-in-law, I don't know.
Doesn't matter. There's no, I have no obligation to, if I'm a rich person, I don't have to give my mechut anything.
No, so sure, but there's no obligation, but I'm sure that there was some sort of, like, informal
pressure.
Yeah,
again, there could be.
Like, your wife's parents live on the street.
You'd be surprised. Like, you know, no.
Look bad.
Right. Listen, look at me. My daughter's married to, you know, them, right?
Or yeah. The daughter herself, once she accumulates as well through her husband, she could say, okay, can you take care of my
family? Yeah, again. But again, you see, in a way...
But she leaves when she's 11, apparently. She might not have that same allegiance to her family.
First of all, remember, most women, okay. Many women die in childbirth.
Okay.
You know, sure. You're talking about a world where, what is it, 20% of women die in childbirth. Talking about where most people had plagues. No one lived past 40. Like, in the olden days, it's not like today, where, you know... It's a different world. What was that?
I said, no wonder there was no
shidduch
crisis.
Yeah, there's no
shidduch
crisis.
It's the opposite.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's why I have more than one wife.
But they would still want their family taken. Like, it's logical that they might want their family taken care of. Even
yeah. So, I think this is a way to help. There are two ways to help out this poor family. One is, yes, of course, maybe they'll be taken care of and they'll be helped out. But it also changes social circles. And changing social circles is also a very good long-term solution. You know, maybe now this wealthy person will hire the father-in-law to work in the business. I don't know. But it does, you know, it's not just a economic system and a way to help someone who's poor. But you're right. The byproduct could also be social reengineering.
Well, could someone sell himself and his daughter? Himself as an Eved Ivri and his daughter's...
Make a plantation, sure. I don't see why not. Sell myself and my daughter.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
Sell my wife.
My issue is in the fact is that, like, that this whole solution is coming through the daughter. Like, through this 11-year-old daughter. Like, yes, I understand.
Yeah, so she needs to agree, meaning she does not need to marry him.
Oh, she knows it?
She has to agree.
Okay. You're not that.
Yeah, she has to agree. She has to agree. Yeah, but again, in those days, women didn't say no. For social, like, it was a different world.
Yeah,
you know.
I didn't ask you to marry him. No.
Yeah, I didn't say no. You know, some guy asked you to marry. Of course, you say yes. You know, of course, he has good midah. You know, of course, he's good looking. So you know, I think, you know, what. The two main points are, you know, how do we help people? How do we assist economic situations without the modern economic world? And I also think that it doesn't mean it's ideal. It doesn't mean it's celebrated. It doesn't mean, yay, women slaves. It means that at the time, it was actually very advanced. For thousands of years ago, this was a very advanced economic social system. Today, we wouldn't do this. It'd be abhorrent. You have different ways of doing it, you know. But it doesn't mean, you know, the Torah is relevant in the context that it was given in, and had meaning at the time. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's an ideal today. And that's why, for example, last time, before dinner, when we spoke about a Jewish slave, there are many mitzvah in the Torah that are not ideal. The most obvious one is divorce. No one is going to say divorce is... Divorce is there's a scenario where it happens that a couple gets married and the Torah creates a mechanism how to change that. Just like, and this is also very obvious, when you steal something, there's a mitzvah in the Torah. A mitzvah d'oraita to get divorced, and there's a mitzvah d'oraita to return stolen property. V'heshiv et exil. No one's going to say, I want to steal so I can fill the mitzvah of returning the item. That's absurd. That's preposterous. It means that we're human beings. We steal. We make mistakes. We're greedy. It was an error. And the Torah has a mechanism to undo the evil that was done. By the way, tshuva is probably the same thing. Tshuva, right? It's according to some interpretations. You know, ideally, don't do tshuva because you don't need to do tshuva. But that's not the reality. We all make mistakes. We all need to do tshuva. So I think the Torah recognizes that life happens. So whether it's divorce, whether it's returning stolen property, whether it's a amai v'ya, whether it's an eved ivri, another case is eshet yefet toar, which means you go to war and you find a good-looking lady and you want to marry her. Those are not good things that rabbis should encourage. They're just realities, especially realities of an ancient world.
So why is it referred to as a slavery if it's like technically if she's married to him and she's referring to it?
So the truth is actually very interesting. I use the term slavery. The Torah never uses the term slavery.
Well,
the Gemara does. Mishnah uses the term slavery. Not here.
Like, what is the translation of that?
No, Amma just means a lady.
Oh, okay.
Right. But I mean the context. You're selling,
yeah.
Again. Love Tate can say to Abadim. Like, we already know what Abadim are from the previous part
right.
of Shabbat.
Right. Again, I agreed. No, for sure.
And that's the answer right there, by the way. Like, the man is getting the money for selling his daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is going straight to the family that
so
she's
he does
leaving.
Sell, then. Yeah, yeah, as yeah. in, like, there's a transfer of some form of property.
Yeah.
Be it money or
chickens
right.
or...
There right. is some type of benefit that the father receives.
Totally.
For sure. Because the father, you know, owns what she does because she's under the age of 12. But the father benefits with the long-term benefit belongs to her that she can actually stay there.
Right, because I was going to say, it almost sounds like kidnapping. Just because someone is under the age of 12, you're essentially determining their life and taking them from one life and putting them in another. Is
yep.
that not what can happen?
Well, she can say no.
She can say no when she's 11?
So again, I think we're under an assumption that the father is not doing this for kicks. We're doing this because the father is in a very difficult economic situation. It's not like... what normal human being would sell their daughter? The answer is, this is a very painful situation... where the father is just so indigent and he's just in such a horrible situation that his hands are totally tied. So what's he supposed to do? He's stuck. And one is he can sell himself. But the problem is if he sells himself, he's still going to leave people at home and how are they going to survive?
Doesn't the master have an obligation to support the person's family? Isn't that part of, I mean, not in the text, but doesn't Rashi say something like
yes.
that?
Yes.
So, his wife, something about, right?
That's, yes. So if he comes in married, then right. that master would have to supply, yes, something, yeah. No, for sure, that is true. That there's some type of support that the master would have to.
So the girl is always 11? It's not always age
11? I think there's a very, very, very small window that she's allowed to be sold.
He says if he fails her in these three ways, does that mean he fails in one of these three ways, or
anyone?
All of
no, anyone, oh. anyone. I can't remember. It's a great question. Hang on. Under the age of 12. Here we go.
I guess it's when she has been married until she's 12, like up until she's 12.
can't remember if it's 10 or 11. Right, the Gemara says, a man is not allowed to marry an additional wife unless he can fully maintain both.
And he gets to choose if he designates her for his son?
Yeah.
What determines that, just if he wants her?
I think he determines, right? I mean, if he's a 70-year-old guy, that's a little creepy.
Yeah, but technically, if he's a 70-year-old guy and he wants to marry her, and she says yes.
Technically, yes, that's true. The chances are he's not 70, because I don't know if they live that long.
Right, that's true also.
So I can't remember what age Jimmy sold. There is a... I don't remember the number. I'm sorry. It's a mission. I can look it up after. If you email me, I can respond. Okay, fine. Let's end there for today. I think we, you know, it's a very interesting... Yeah. Listen, it's... but again, I think what's important is it's not ideal. It's not something we should be celebrated. But I think the Torah tries to create a way. How can we help people who are in very difficult situations through social engineering, economic?
Yeah.
So.